Before we begin this episode, I want to give a huge shout out to all of our patrons over on patreon.com/bitterbrownfems, with special shout outs to Cristian Galindo, Evelyn Preciado, and Cassandra Tapia. If you also want to support independent podcasting, head over to patreon.com/bitterbrownfems. The link is in the description. And let's start the show. Hello, 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 everyone. This is your host, Ruben, coming to you all the way from Portland, Oregon. And today we have a super dope guest. I would say that they're an activist, a writer, a thinker, a pop culture aficionado. Caleb, Luna, you might know them from social media, from all their writings. You might have even taken a class with them once upon a time. They are just such a beacon in what we understand to be fat liberation politics, disability rights writing, performance, and pop culture critique. And so, yeah, welcome, Caleb.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm so happy to be here.
And every episode we begin with a recession indicator. What is your recession indicator this week?
My recession indicator is New York City taking the contract from Taylor Swift to have her fuck ass MAGA wedding at Madison Square Garden.
And what about it rings as a recession indicator to you?
I'm just like, clearly. They need the money. I think Taylor Swift, it's such a stunt, and I feel like Taylor Swift would do this in any economy. But the fact that New York City was like, oh yeah, we clearly need the money from these contracts to shut down, like, I don't know how much of the city for this person's wedding. That is reading a recession indicator.
Yeah, they're shutting down like I think about as much as they shut down when Trump came in, like, which is very MAGA of her. At first, I was like, is it a MAGA wedding? But then I remember she has a bunch of like MAGA girlfriends that she met through being a wife of the football life or whatever. A part of me is like, as someone who's like writes supposedly so romantically and everything, like, how romantic is it to book a stadium to get married in? Like, what is that? Do you? Oh, I just like always think about, usually you hear the opposite end where people who are really romantic want to have a private situation. They say like 100 people is, you know, a lot, 200 is pushing it, blah, blah. Like, I come from a big Mexican situation where like, it's romantic in a different way, and there's a lot of people usually. But it's usually in my people's towns in Puebla, they invite the little villages. So all the village is invited to the wedding. And it's like people you grew up with, you know, the local priest, everybody's teacher. It is immediate community. And still, a stadium wedding sounds ridiculous to me.
I saw something saying that Mattis, Matt, like, first of all, she obviously has the resources to like get married where the fuck ever, and like nobody would have to hear anything about it if she didn't want them to. But also that Madison Square Garden apparently has the infrastructure already to like record it as some sort of like concert experience to sell to her fans, which is like another thing where I'm just like, all of these like cash grabs are such a clear like transfer of wealth from her, like, I have to assume, like, largely working class fan base population, like working class population fan base, because most of us are, to her greedy, greedy little pockets. And so I'm buying that theory. But again, I think she would do this in any economy because she is such a greedy capitalist.
Yeah, it's just about the fact that the city accepted it. I'm thinking also, you know, I had this thought about like, you know, all billionaires exploit people. And I did have a moment of like blankness in my head about like, oh, wait, who the fuck did Taylor Swift exploit? And it's like she either underpaid some people, or the most like immediate one, like you mentioned, is like, oh, she's exploiting her fans, the emotional connection, parasocial connection she has with her fans, to sell them 10 different versions of the same song and the same record, which is wild to me. Like, I also don't understand that, like, mania, I guess, because I love some people. Like I love Carly Rae, and I have some Carly Rae,
Course, yeah.
Beyonce, Mariah Carey. I love them. I have bought special edition merch or a meet and greet with Carly Rae or
Totally.
good seats with, for Beyonce's Renaissance tour. I've never thought about buying like 10 different versions of the same thing.
Yeah. Totally. I mean, I have like a $30 like Japanese import of Emotions
Emotion.
Side B
Oh, that one is
because
incredible. It was first released over there.
yeah, I fucking love that album. Like, I've also bought like VIP passes to see Carly Rae Jepsen. And it's like, yes, at some level, like all artists are going to do this, right? Like all artists have variants because that's just kind of like the industry. But I do think that there is a point, not only like that she takes it to the extreme, but also that her fans are conditioned to buy 8 copies of each variant in order to like intentionally and strategically manipulate the charts on her behalf, because like that is how her career has been set up and like intentionalized out. And like I think also, I'll just say like I've never really like I've heard of some of her songs. They sound great. I love pop music. I have nothing against white women singer songwriters. Like I fucking love Carly Rae Jepsen. I love Robin. I love Zara Larsson. But it's like really her fan base. Like I've been on Twitter for a while, and I'm just like her fan base is so racist, homophobic, fatphobic. Like, and I'm just like, there's no way that she could cultivate this fan base significantly that people could feel so comfortable speaking this way on her behalf. Like, he clearly has accepted it and participated in that to some degree. So that's really what it's about for me, is just that she clearly feels like I would feel very unsafe as like a fat queer person of color at a Taylor Swift concert in a way that I wouldn't at a Carly Rae Jepsen concert or even a Zara Larsson concert. So
Oh.
clearly it's so much about like the fan base that she has cultivated versus the music or even like her as a person, because all billionaires are.
Yeah. I don't know if you're old enough or online back in the day when the alt-right was first coming up on the
Yeah.
internet. They made her a poster girl for the
They
internet. She
claimed
was the
her.
alt-right's girlfriend, is what
Yeah.
the unofficial title they had for her. And it was, pictures of her at like a costume party where other her people she was taking pictures with had like Nazi stuff on them.
Yeah.
And like she never like talked about that. And so because of her silence, people were just like, well, she knows she has to, because Taylor Swift was so a Tumblrina, which is somebody, so
Yeah.
we used to call people who spend all their time on Tumblr. She was so on Tumblr and social media when in its infancy, that people are like, there's no way she hasn't seen this.
Right.
So why hasn't she disavowed it? Right. So I think that things have grown from there to where we are now, where we have her latest album, which I was ready to give a to like. I was honestly ready to like it because I love Max Martin production. I grew up on Britney Spears and Robin and NSYNC, and I really love 1989. And so I thought this was gonna be, I was entering it with, an open mind. And when you're singing lyrics about wanting, your neighborhood to look like your white husband,
Yeah.
I think somebody who calls themselves an English teacher should know what that reads like.
Yeah. Especially in this like political climate where I'm just like the like white people, the white nationalists are clearly so anxious about like keeping America white, and like white women having babies to like repopulate the like declining birth rates and stuff. I'm just like, in that political historical context, there's no, like I think a lot of her fans are reading that as like, of course somebody would want like some sort of like apolitical neutral thing that, and like sure, like white people fall in love with each other sometimes, like they have white babies, like that happens, right? Like I know white parents, but
Sure.
the white parents that I know are like really intentionally like diversifying their friend groups and populations, right? Like they're again, making different moves rather than being like, I want to live in a place that looks only like other white people. And yeah, again, for like you know, we've seen her fan base like decode the like every single like message, color, number that she has ever like put out there. And then suddenly, whenever she's flagging these like really obvious like white supremacist lyrics and symbols and messages, and like it's we're reading too deep into it.
I'm also remembering that that's not even like the worst part of. She has a whole song called like Canceled, where she talks about her friends who she likes because they're not liked by or shunned by society or whatever it is. Lord.
And also, like, she said, she literally saying, "I'm not a bad bitch." Like, who is your audience that is not a bad bitch, does not want to be a bad bitch, is not bad bitch aspirational? That is just like, you've lost me.
Yeah, that someone is always obviously wants to like make the clear separation of like her and like black culture essentially.
It's so coded.
And that reminds me of like the topic in that I reached out to you about, 'cause we've known of each other for a while and we've recorded on a previous show before. You have a lot of writings on like race, gender, sexuality, and where they intersect with like fatness, right? And one of the things I saw you posting recently is that you saw like a billboard for GLP once, which I think is a generic name for Ozempic. And you mentioned like how these like the normalization of them is like really affecting society and the way we engage with each other. So yeah, I want to hear more about that, like the beginnings of those thoughts and where you think they go.
So GLP-1s is like the I think it's the like this is I might butcher this, but I want to say it's like the chemical component that activates all of these drugs, Ozempic, Wegovy, Mounjaro, et cetera, et cetera. And I feel like it is in there's something about it that helps people produce insulin or process insulin. There's a function of it that is for diabetics. And so diabetics have been taking these medicines for a while because it helps their bodies process insulin. But they have sort of manipulated the formula for non-diabetics to make it an appetite suppressant in a way that helps people lose weight. And also has like a ton of side effects, right? And so that is really like the sort of cultural context we're experiencing right now, where like a lot of people are getting very, very thin, losing a lot of weight really rapidly, which is like not in and of itself a bad thing. But it's sort of the how this is coming about and when it's coming about that I find interesting and suspicious as like, you know, I've been doing fat activism for almost 20 years now. I'm a fat studies scholar. I teach fat studies classes, right? And my fat studies classes are very much about like how the body is produced under these systems of colonialism and particularly like racial formation, and how the ways that we think about race are very much about size and approximating size in these various ways. Right. So that post was I was actually leaving Ralph's, which is like a very Southern California like grocery store brand. I had never heard of it or encountered it until I moved down here.
Why are you from
And it
Texas?
yeah. So I think it's Kroger. We had Kroger in Texas,
It's
and I think
Safeway
it's
too.
yeah. Oh yeah, because we had Safeway up in the Bay.
Yeah.
So yeah, I was leaving Ralph's, and there's like a big banner out front that was like something about like your insurance company can cover GLP-1s, or there's something about like helping its shoppers get easier access to GLP-1s. And I kind of posted about it, and I was like, wow, like every, you know, we hear all these critiques about like big pharma, you know, especially coming out of the White House right now, that they're trying to scale back even like vaccine mandates because of what these, you know, pharmaceutical companies are doing to our bodies, and we're like, there's this culture of being suspicious of them because they might, make us autistic or something else, right? Like, but then whenever there's these companies that are like really intentionally like making this drug super available, then suddenly like there's like not a critique around it. And it's really interesting. Like, I've been teaching at UC Santa Barbara for a few years now, and the last couple of times I've taught my Fat Studies class, like we talk about this on the first day, and like it's so interesting because my students have become very aware that like they're being marketed GLP-1s. Like they're all over social media, especially. Like they're like, I can't go on these apps without being sold a GLP-1, not even from like a doctor, but from like Hims or something or hers, right? Like they're being produced, they're being marketed as like
Gender affirming care for
and
cis
like
people.
right, and essentially like a vitamin or like a dietary supplement also, right? Like and I think as a fat studies person, a fat activist, like, and like we've seen this before, like there's been multiple waves of these like sort of miracle drugs that are pushed by doctors, by the pharmaceutical industry. I think most recently we had Fen-Phen in the late 90s, if people are familiar with that, which resulted in actually a lawsuit because it fucked with a bunch of people's hearts. A bunch of people had, they lost a lot of weight, but they also had a lot of heart attacks and I'm doing heart problems, right? So that's kind of where I'm coming at this from, is just like we have seen this before. And I just don't trust these people, right? Like I don't trust that anything about this is actually like has our best intention in mind as a population. And my sort of critique of that also was that, GLP-1s are being sold to us as just as inevitable and apolitical as data centers and AI, right? And like we have again these like suspicions and critiques about like how, everybody is saying that AI is here to stay. We just have to learn how to live with it and all this stuff that it's really being forced on our throats and not in the fun way. Yeah, and just like we should be just as suspicious of how GLP-1s are being sold to us and marketed to us as inevitable as apolitical, et cetera.
That brings to mind a connection that someone just threw into the internet void recently, and it was like, and it's similar to your connection here, that it was like, should we be more suspicious that like data centers and AI are being pushed as inevitable, and that GLP-1s are becoming more popular at the same time because data centers and AI are taking people's jobs. People have less to eat. GLP-1s make it so that I assume you don't have to eat as much. Like, should we be worried about that? And I also connect that to like, yeah, why isn't there like more like the same type of hysteria that we get from something that has been proven, like a vaccine, right? And gender affirming care, for trans people, because cis people get gender affirming care already, and that's normalized. But when a trans girl wants to take hormones, and people make a fuss about getting injected, but then Ozempic is so normalized, and that is also an injection. Only now did I find out that there's like a working pill form, but usually it's an injection. Those things are all butting heads against each other, and there's a dissonance that they ignore the people pushing this, that is being ignored. And I think a part of it is like this white supremacist notion of like what bodies need to be, right? And yeah, so there's no pushback against GLP-1s from Republicans or whatever, because like that is ultimately what white women in particular, like what they want them to be.
Right. Yeah, I mean, I think that is a really good connection about the AI and data centers taking people's jobs and GLP-1s like reducing people's appetites. I think it's in a long critique in fat activism that, you know, women especially are encouraged to diet because it's easier to control and manipulate and suppress a population that is essentially malnourished and underfed, right? Like you need to be like calories are energy, right? And so if you're consuming less energy, then you have less energy to fight back, to stand up for yourself. And at the same time, you know, I think one of the things that really scares me about AI beyond the, you know, obvious like climate impacts is the way that it's eroding people's critical thinking skills, that like we're really outsourcing this. And so it feels like a sort of multi-pronged attack of the body and the mind, where, or you know, the body mind as a whole, as some disability scholars say, right? Like we're like reducing our critical thinking skills and also reducing our ability to we're undermining our ability to like fight back by taking in less energy. And there's something else about the second part of what you were saying that I wanted to
Taking people's jobs, white. There's no pushback because it's like leading to white. Like it's ultimately like a white supremacist thing.
That like, you know, it is a really particularly cultivated beauty standard that it aligns with, and so that feels worth any, you know, like I think one of the things that I write about is there was a study that came out. This is like 2014, 2015. I saw it on Pink News, if you remember, like one of the older like gay blog media sites. But it was the study, and it was like a relatively small study of like probably less than 100 gay men in the UK. But the results were that these men would they would voluntarily give up a year of their life for the perfect body, and they would voluntarily give up 10 years of their life if they could have the perfect body tomorrow. And I was just like, that's so interesting, as like a fat person who, like, you know, my whole life, like the fear mongering around fatness is that it's going to shorten our lives, right? And here, and in this study, like the perfect body was like really explicitly defined as like, you know, tall, lean, muscular, you know, not balding, right? Like again, these very specific like white supremacist European body standards. And so I was like, well, there's holes in the argument here. If like you're telling me that you're concerned about my longevity, but you're also willing to give up your own for to fit like a particular aesthetic standard, right? And I think that is a trade-off that a lot of people make pretty consistently, that the privileges and wins of bodily conformity feel worth all of the risks. You know, like we're already like people on Ozempic and Mounjaro, like it's not an easy drug. Like it fucks with your body, it makes you sick, right? Like I know multiple people who are taking these drugs who are like very happy with their weight loss, and then also telling me about like, oh, you know, one person was like, oh yeah, like I couldn't really celebrate my birthday because like I took this one thing to counteract the side effects of this, like, you know, GLP-1 that I'm microdosing, and then that made me sick for 2 weeks, and so then I didn't really have the energy to like celebrate my birthday. And there was no like critique around that or like anything critical around that. It's just like a risk that people are accepting, and yeah, it's I think really unfortunate.
And it reminds me of something that I think you wrote recently, but also is like echoed in different like disability and like fat like rights writers and thinkers, is that like oftentimes like like when people talk about like, losing weight for health or like being thin for health, it's not really health that they're saying. Like they're using the word health as a replacement for beauty or desirability in a conformist way, right? You wrote about this in My Sexuality is Fat Asses, where yeah, you had gone to a club where like disability, like disabled people were just as like on like the same scale of desirability, right? Whereas before in out or in outside spaces, we just like have like blinders on about like disabled people. There's no way disabled people can be hot or that fat people can be hot, right? And so it reminds me of this as like people look at like this quote unquote skinny transformation of like you say pop artists or their friends and they don't second guess it, right? They don't ask like is everything okay or you missed your birthday, should you maybe think about that? Like I know that I wouldn't miss my birthday. Like I am a Leo sun rising, so I mean I have week
It's
long
important.
celebrations. So to me that would be unthinkable. Like I would have to gotten sick through natural means. I would never induce that.
I mean, it's I think about this like kind of regularly, like Abby Lee Miller from Dance Moms. There's this when I was in college, I was like working at Barnes and Noble over like school breaks, and I would always like read the like gossip magazines. And I remember one time Abby Lee Miller was on the cover of like People magazine or something, and it was like, the headline was like her like magical, amazing, like transformative weight loss. And I was like, oh God, like let's, see how she did it. And then you read the story, and the story is that she got sick. She had like cancer or something. And but it was like still, celebrated as her like body transformation. And it's very wild. Oh, that's the trade-off that like many people make. And also that it like that these, as I was saying, like one of the side effects of these GLP-1s is stomach paralysis, right? So like your stomach like literally stops working, and then you have to and so that's a disabling impact, right? And so then you have to again be on medications for the rest of your life. It requires surgery, requires other sort of interventions to correct that. And then you probably are gonna gain the weight back anyway. So yeah, it's hard because like when we are being critical of the GLP-1s, like it often just sounds like we're being haters, and like I will admit that I'm a hater and like I fully own that, but I'm like there's also like no, like as people who are have been activists and studying these things for like decades now, like we can see like the risks of this, and it's actually like we're sacrificing our bodies. And like as somebody who's also disabled, like I don't want to present disability as like the worst outcome in the world, but also like if you can prevent fucking up your body, I would highly recommend that.
There's a couple that you just threw a lot. I kind of don't know where to start, but I've gone through my own journey too, and I remember there's been a lot of points like checkpoints in my life where I'm just like, things are not going well. I'm letting eating disorders beat the shit out of me. Especially in my mid-20s, it was the worst. And then I somewhere along the line I saw this thing about like healthy at every size and also like if you're not disabled then like we should be paying more attention about what you're how you're growing strength-wise or other things, exercise because you want to jump or you want to fight or something, you know? Don't exercise for the aesthetic because, like, your body's gonna be your body, like, and they present it like different breeds of dogs, for example, like a greyhound, like a bulldog can want to be as skinny as a greyhound, but it's just gonna look like a skinny bulldog. It's not ever gonna look like a greyhound, and that are things that have snapped into me, and ultimately. Over since like 2016, essentially 2017, there was a big dropout in a couple of years where I just couldn't. I was like going through hardcore depression, just did not exercise. But my big motivator since 2016 has been a Nazi worked out today. Like you should like work out. Like I'm an able-bodied person for the most part. If somebody needs me to throw a punch, like I should know how to do that. So that's been my motivator. Over like, beauty. When I think of health, I think about like, how is my gut doing today? Where's my mental health? Not so much where I used to stare in my mirror and like have a field day. I'm also thinking about like, certain gymnasts or artists who like I look at the way like Lizzo performs, and I don't have that stamina. Like, and the gymnastics she does and all that, and I'm just like. You can't look at her and be like, that's an unfit person. That's an unhealthy person. That is a fat person who's gonna dance circles around you, like, probably outlift you. Like, so us attributing like health to body sizes just doesn't mesh with the reality of people's bodies.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, like it's funny. Like I remember, I have high blood pressure, so like it's important for me to like work out for that reason, right? And like, there's exercise has like a lot of benefits. Like I don't think anybody is denying that in terms of like strength, stamina, longevity, mental health, endorphins, et cetera, et cetera. So I remember, like when I started going to the gym and doing like a lot of cardio. Mostly cardio for my like blood pressure, and like I was just like noticing like a lot of people were like lifting weights and like flexing in the mirror, and I was like, that doesn't feel like it's about health to me. Like that feels like it's clearly about aesthetics, which like that's fine. Just like be like own it, and don't say that this is for something that it's not, because what you're pointing to is like, yeah, there's lots of different ways to exercise for lots of different reasons, and most exercise isn't about like sculpting the body or like strength, like building muscle in these like particular like targeted muscle building, right? Like that is like a very specific form of exercise for like a very specific reason that is also not necessarily healthy. However, we want to like frame that. And yeah, I think also like with the like dog breed thing, something else that like was a real game changer for me was like it sounds kind of silly, but like again, when I was like in grad school, I like you there was one of those like memes going around that now feels like a really obvious like AI grift of like like an aging filter meme, right? Of like putting you put a filter on your face and it'll age you up. And I did that and I was like, oh my God, I look exactly like my dad. And I have like such a complicated relationship with my father, as like many of us do. And that was really hard. That was hard to see that. But it also made me, it like completely changed my relationship to my body, because I was like, oh yeah, like my, not only is my dad fat, but we are like shaped the same way, right? Like we are in like pretty similar sizes. And beyond that, like we are like as many Latinos, Tejanos, Mestizos are, we are like descended from detribalized indigenous people. And so there's like that family lore about, the indigenous people in our family that we don't have much more information beyond that. But when I started meeting like indigenous people from the Southwest, and like they again looked like my dad in terms of their body shape, their skin tone, right? Like another thing that I think about when in terms of like racialization is like that it's not just about the size and shape of our bodies, but it's also about the size and shape of our features, right? Like I have a wide nose, I have big ears, right? Like those are features that I see in other indigenous people from the Southwest that I'm like, oh, you are like, I don't know you, but your family, right? Like, and again, when we go back, you know, hundreds of years around the transatlantic slave trade, the colonization of the Americas, like these are really intentional discourses that were produced about what kinds of food people eat, how that impacts their bodies, what kinds of bodies are beautiful, right? Like these are not just things that we've like pulled out of thin air. And that these were like Christopher Columbus literally was like writing in his journals about the Taino people, and about like why they are so poorly, you know, bred, to for lack of a better word, that they're like dying, right? And being like, oh, it must be because they're not eating the same European foods that we are, right? Like not thinking about like disease, trauma, war, genocide, right? It was just like, oh, their bodies must be like inherently less built to survive than ours are, and it's because of the food that they're eating, right? And that they're during the colonial period, like there were these really intentional moves that were made about food, body, beauty that we continue to like shape these discourses, right? That continue to shape how we think about ourselves, how we think about what's beautiful, what's healthy, et cetera, et cetera. And like especially how those things are connected too. So yeah, it's like it's again a high stakes discourse that I think we've had this like body positive moment that is all about like, you know, loving yourself, again, health at every size, feeling good in your body. I think these things are like really important, but I think they also reduce these like really big political conversations down to these like individual functions, and we kind of lose like the larger bit of it if we just like think about how confident we are in our bodies, which again, like we should be. I'm not saying that's not important, but it's just like if we're thinking about liberation, if we're thinking about collectivity, like that's not going to get us there.
Yeah. Oh, you reminded me of something else that you wrote, and maybe I should finish with that. And instead, something I want to come back to is that in that same essay, "My Sexuality is Fat Asses," I think your conclusion was like, while fat bitches of all genders getting good dick from all genders is politically important to me, I'm not saying it's going to solve all of our problems, but I am asking, what if it could, right? So I do want to come back to that before I forget. I just put it out into the world so I don't forget, because I didn't write that down immediately. But you mentioned like body positivity discourse, and like I thought we're moving in a very good direction, I feel, for quite some time. And I think GLP-1, I think if I had to place like a turning point where I feel like we're reverting, I would have to say the popularization of GLP-1s. So now it seems like we're no longer like super like celebrating like all shapes and sizes, right? And I forgot who it was that essentially said something to the effect of like, now, because these things are so popular, like being fat is now a choice in a way that we is not being fat is now being perceived as a choice that you're making. And, you know, people are no longer accepting this idea of like, you know, we're all built different or like health or blah, blah, because they're like, you could be skinny. You just go do the thing, go take the shot. And that's one thing. Another thing that it's where I feel like we've overturned is that like the eating disorder communities are regaining their foothold on like the internet like landscape.
Yes.
And I mean, they're not in the popular landscape. And where before we would say things like, you know, you can't ask a fat person about their body because, you know, or their choices, or people who have disabilities or deformalities or blah, blah, like it's not nice to ask about their body. Now that same language is being used to protect people who are really skinny all of a sudden.
Yeah.
People like Chadwick Boseman are being used as like I don't know if the right word is scapegoat is, or like as a shield to protect like people questioning, for example, Ariana Grande about her really scary weight loss that she's experienced over the last since the Wicked promotional tour, I want to say,
Yeah.
and that I think has reached like an unimaginable height right now with her Eternal Sunshine tour, where she looks very scary thin. But now people are using the same body positive
Yes.
discourse or like slogans that we used to like protect actually marginalized people, marginalized bodies, in particular, like, you know, a black fat women who I think were like the birth of that language, and now are being used to protect super skinny white women.
Yeah.
So those things are things that you bring to mind.
I'm so Yeah, and like the Ariana Grande stuff is like so intense. It really scares me. And it's really hard to talk about, you know. It's so hard to talk about because she's also been pretty transparent about like not liking people commenting on her body. And I think that's very fair, you know, especially for women in the public eye. Like, women's bodies have been screwed. Like, you know, I came up in the early 2000s when like Jessica Simpson was being called fat, right? Like Tyra Banks is
Tyra Banks,
being, you know, like these,
Britney
and it
Spears,
really,
like Demi
really,
Moore
oh
performance,
my God, yes.
which I look back on recently and I'm like, she's doing way more than some of the other pop girls nowadays in her
Yes.
little black getup.
Yeah. Also, that's like, it's just one of my favorite Britney songs. So it's like so unfortunate that it was part of that whole sabotage of her.
Yeah.
But yeah, so I'm just like, you know, for women in the spotlight especially, like absolutely we should be cognizant of how they're talking about their bodies. A lot of people are like concerned because Ariana Grande has such a young fan base that are inevitably going to be influenced by her body. I don't that I think that's a legitimate concern. I don't maybe it's because I don't have children that I like it doesn't feel as I don't know. It's not the top of my concern for her. I think there's lots of different like role models and like conversations we can have. Yeah, I think it's to your point, I'm just like, wow, I've never seen people defending fat people the way I have thin people, right? Like that there's you know, I've been fat my whole life. I've been fat on the internet for like a really long time. People are very, again, especially now, like there's this like people have this idea that it's like calories in, calories out, right? That like all you that fat people don't exercise, that like all of these, and not just like people on the internet, right? Like I've had doctors like say like wildly presumptive shit to me about like my eating and dietary habits without asking me a single question, which is also like it's been an interesting turn, like teaching fat studies and like having when we get to the BMI and like my students come to class and I'm like, oh my God, like a doctor has like it's like this unifying sort of experience that we all have regardless of our body size that like a doctor has at some point called all of us fat and told us to eat less and
Yeah.
exercise more without ever asking us anything about how we eat and exercise. And my
Yeah.
students come to class and they're like, I'm like an athlete. And these doctors are like telling me that like I should, I'm
Yeah.
not doing enough, right?
I had a fat friend who went to the doctor 'cause she had leg pain, and they are like, "Oh, it's 'cause you're fat. Send her
Yeah.
home." And she went back sometime later and she's like, "No, it's really bad." Only when it was like a super emergency and she needed to be hosp like
Yeah.
they found like a real infection that she had.
Yeah.
that needed to be treated immediately. But had she not trusted herself, something really bad could have happened.
Yeah, I mean, that happens all the time, right? And then whenever, fat people die, like I call that, medical abuse, medical malpractice, disenfranchisement, right? Like it's one of the passive ways that fat people are killed. And then if somebody dies from an infection that was never treated, even after multiple efforts to go to the doctor and treat it, then it's their death is blamed on their body size, right? And this is, again, compounded by gender, is compounded by race. Like women are not believed, Black women especially are not believed, right? Like all of these, like medical professionals are bringing all of these biases into their interactions with people, and it's killing us. It's like actually very quite high stakes. But yeah, like back to the Ariana Grande, the just this way that I think you are very astute to pinpoint the rise of GLP-1s with the decrease in like acceptance of diverse bodies and especially fat bodies, right? Like it's there's been a huge, excuse me, pivot in the culture that's been hard for me to like work through as like a writer and an activist to be like, okay, like I was, there was this moment where I felt like people were sympathetic to the ideas that like that people are people, to put it bluntly, right? And like that no longer feels like the cultural climate. So I'm like, how do I reorient to this?
And I think there's like other cultural markers too. Like, I feel like we had a moment where like we were getting fat pop stars or fat public figures, and like that's no longer the thing. And, I think one example of that is like Meghan Trainor, who like obviously did the whole Ozempic thing. But I think she found out the hard way that sometimes the body is the brand, and when the body does no longer fit the zeitgeist, then you don't have a career anymore.
Yeah, which also like he's also another example that even when I was, I was a fat activist and I was like, oh, she's being heralded as like a big person. Like, what is happening? She's like a perfectly average sized person. But yeah, even now is not she's kind of lost it with her. Even, like as a big fan of Drag Race, like I'm seeing a lot of these queens like
Oh God,
especially on their All-Star
Ginger
runs,
Minj.
Ginger Minj, Mistress Isabel Brooks, even Mystique, on this most on this current season, I'm like,
Did not recognize
y'all
her.
lose the weight and y'all kind of lose it. You kind of lose your the things that make you special and ta really talented, right? And so, not to say that these people are like no longer like perfectly talented performers, etc., but
I will say
it.
that, oh, continue.
No, go.
I will say that Ginger Minj, when she lost that weight in like, it had to be such a short turnaround because she was fat in the first in her round, and then when she came into the return, it had to be like 3 months or something. I don't know how long they gave him a break. She was skinny, and I feel like her she still hadn't realized how to. I don't think she has realized yet how to make her makeup work. But I will say that even though she is who she is, she's apparently like a liar, allegedly, and obviously got preferential treatment that turned people off for her. She was kind of, she gave it to the children and stopped that train. I don't know if you've seen it.
Oh yeah, I really. Oh my God, I was surprised by how much I loved Stop That Train. It was so fun. It was like everything I wanted. Oh my God, it
I was
was so
ready to
good.
get
And
like, to like, I was like, oh, I need a cocktail before this. But I
yeah.
like, but surprisingly, without getting too out of the way, I was stopped by a train on my way to have pre-drinks for Stop That Train. And in Portland, they can take up to an hour the train. So I was stuck for a very long time until I dated like a weird Yui situation, and I got there like
Yeah.
10 minutes before. So I watched that shit like pretty stone cold sober. Like, and I
Wow.
still had an amazing time.
Yeah. It was so much fun.
But they lose their judge.
Yeah, it is. It's something. I forgot where it was going with this.
Like pop stars now and like public figures are now skinny. They lose
Yeah.
public favor or they lose that magic sometimes.
Yeah, I think my point, I think to your point, I'm just, again, I'm just like, it's wild to think people go to bat for people who are, who have lost weight in a scary, and dangerous too, right? Like there's, you know, the Ariana Grande conversation has brought up a lot of people talking about Karen Carpenter, right? Who just had anorexia. And had a heart attack and died very young, partially because she gained weight too quickly in her recovery process, right? I think that's the thing that I want to say about like Ariana Grande. Like we can't say for sure what's going on with her, but that the illness part of an eating disorder gets lost in the conversation, and it becomes like a personal moral failing, and we it kind of gets decontextualized from the fact that like this is it's not necessarily something she can control, it's not something she's doing intentionally, if that is what's happening for her, right? And so I think that's another thing that I'm just thinking about is like, you know, I think it's very it's like actively encouraged in our culture to have an eating disorder, right? Like much less easy to develop one. So how do we do this in a way that is like again like actually about people's health, right? And their longevity, and have these like really complicated conversations, because it's like I'm scared for Ariana Grande. Like I've been a fan of hers for a really long time, and like I think she's an incredible pop star. And how do you say hey, also, I think it's so interesting that she has like a plus size dancer on her tour with her right now, right? Like, as I think a lot about pop stars and pop music as we kind of like got to like at the start of this, and like something that I love about pop stars is the world that they build, right? And part of their world building is who they bring on stage with them, and like by extension, like who's invited into the show, into their world. And so for her, regardless of what's happening to her, like she clearly intentionally is bringing in this plus size dancer, who's very talented, I think is really cool and also like interesting to see not alongside her.
Yeah, people have brought that up in weird ways. I don't know what to make of it because most things that I've heard have been like really weird. Like she brings them for comparison or something like that. And I'm just like,
Oh.
that's a gross way to look at someone who
Yeah.
can do something with their body that you, the most regular humans, can't.
Yeah.
Like,
And again, like a
that's a
highly
reduction.
skilled and accomplished athlete like that, putting on performing in a stadium show is like, it's not easy, and most people cannot do it. So like and those things, those comments too are just such an insight into like people's own shit and like their projections, and like it's like that's something that would have never occurred to me. And so for the fact that it's like top of mind for you, like there's something about you that I think people should sit with.
Yes, that reminds me of something you wrote in Can Fat People Be the Star of Our Own Stories? And while you were talking about like, the term chaser as someone who, is attracted to fatter people and fat attraction in general, like is not like if a thin person brings like a fat partner, that is seen immediately as like a fetish or like, oh, something is going on with the thin person that they have to be attracted to this fat person. It's not seen as neutral as like, heterosexuality or, muscle for muscle people. There is always something that is suspicious about that attraction. And then similar with the Ariana Grande thing with her dancer, it's like, oh, she couldn't just have thought that's been the most one of the most skilled dancers that can do her thing. She had to have some ulterior motive.
I get so frustrated with like the conversation around I use chasers like as in a broad term, and I know that it's like kind of controversial, and I write about that, like, yeah, chasers have a bad rap because they're people and people are shitty sometimes, right? But like, I also think that we deserve to be with people who are sincerely attracted to us, and that is something I've benefited from and something I want in my life. And I think that it's not like any person saying I want to be with somebody who's attracted to me is not suspicious until they're a fat person, and I'm like, what's up with
Yes.
that? Right? And at the same time, I've slept with many people who are like partnered with people who are thin publicly, right? But then like have these desires that they feel like are secret or that they can't share publicly, in these certain ways because of the cultural pressures around who people should be partnered with, who signifies a deserving partner, desirable partner, right? Like, because those are things that people are thinking about when they're choosing their partners, subconsciously or not. Like, can I bring this person home to my family, right? Like, what's my family gonna say? And that can be about body size, it can be about race, it can be about gender, right? Like, it can be about religion, it can be about country of origin, right? Like, these are biases that people bring into this arena of life that they're not necessarily like thinking about or thinking that it's like important, right? I think, and it's going back to your other point, like about these spaces like allowing more complexity for disability, right? Like it's been interesting to participating in them and like, yeah, like feeling sexy and desirable in ways that I haven't felt in other spaces, including gay bars, including queer and color parties, right? Like, and also seeing people who are using canes and walkers and wheelchairs and like them still being flirted with and like people, sitting on daddy's lap. Yeah. His scooter, right? Like it's still being kind of incorporated into the scene of desire in these ways that I think in mainstream normative spaces, like it can't be. And so my point is just like these things are happening if we just like open our minds to see the possibility there. And also like, something that I feel like I really learned from teaching about studies is that like people really want to feel sexy and they want to feel desired and desirable, and like I think that's very normal. But what I think is hard about that is that they have a very limited idea of what that can mean and look like. And I'm just like, listen, it doesn't matter who you are and what you want to look what you look like somebody's trying to smash, like it might not be the person that you want, but they're out there, and like you can make your own choices around that. So like if we just like kind of release ourselves from that obligation and let ourselves be, like I just think it can open up so much for us.
Something that was oddly empowering was this thing that Trixie Mattel said in like some video or another when she was in conversation with Katya, and it was like, I don't have to fuck me. I don't have to fuck me. So like what I look like is another person's business. But One thing you've also been writing about that has been like so interesting to observe has been the whole looks-maxing. I don't even know what to, like fucking cult on the
Phenomena, this
internet,
crazy.
who's one of their leaders is like Clavicular. I don't know his real name,
Avicular.
which is like I assume that's not his real name. I think
No.
so. I think the clavicle is like one of the gayest body parts, and it's like so like when I think about unrobing, like that's like the first thing, or like I think about like a Marilyn Monroe or like a diva, like I just think like that's like the beginning of the ba ba boom, and so it's so odd to me that that is where you're what you wanted to name yourself after, A and B, like that you're ultimately doing this for the approval of other men, and knowing full fact that like it is not healthy. The clavicular person and his followers have said things. I don't know how true they are, because I don't know the reality of like things like smashing your own face with a hammer or taking meth to be skinny or whatever. But you're ultimately performing for other men to the point that at one In one podcast, Clavicular said that that sleeping with a woman is not the point, because that's like so it comes and goes or something like that. It's about like the power that being beautiful gets you.
I think looks maxing has been a really interesting cultural phenomenon for many reasons that you're saying. First of all, I keep forgetting he's 20. So he's like very young, very naive. And this is it's another thing that like scares me about, I also say like looks maxing is like it's a really wide range of behaviors that is not just about like bone smashing, but also about like body sculpting and like using makeup to like accentuate your features in a more like Western beauty standard way, right? Like all of these rituals that are not about like building confidence and connection to the self, but are about like conforming to like Western European body standards, right? It is all about That's all looks maxing to me. And again, like confidence is important, feeling good in your body is important, feeling good about yourself is important, all of that. None of that means it has to look like you have to, aspire to this pinnacle of Western white supremacist beauty standards. And again, like another thing that's surprising about this conversation about clavicular is like, people are very sympathetic to him in a way that I've never really seen them be sympathetic to fat people, right? I've heard people be like, oh, he's so young. Like, I was actually kind of disappointing. Like, some of my favorite podcasters, they were like, oh, I just feel so bad for him because he was clearly like such a, he was clearly like captured by this like right wing manosphere at a really like vulnerable moment in his time. And that's probably true. But again, like, I just like don't see anybody like bending over backwards to build sympathy for fat people, especially because like many fat people are disabled or sick or injured, right? Like there are many conditions that where weight gain is part of the symptoms or is part of the treatment, right? Or that make it difficult to exercise or diet, right? Like there's many reasons. There's many beyond just like genetics, right? Like there's lots of reasons that people are fat, and I rarely hear people say like maybe their mental health medication has a side effect of weight gain and they actually are feeling really good about themselves for the first time ever, and that's why they're fat, right? Like I don't hear those conversations happening, like looks maxing is just like a wild phenomenon, and like I think also. And like it's a capitulation to these systems of white supremacy to be like I have to look like this or my quality of life will lower. Which again, like there's truth in that. Absolutely, there are privileges to like being beautiful in these particular ways and conforming in these particular ways. Absolutely, but that doesn't mean that it's your life is impossible, it doesn't mean that there are ways to work against that, right? And like, yeah, and like being in these spaces with bears and chubs and chasers is like really like an alternate world where like a lot of different things are possible, and there's a lot of different ways that we can orient to ourselves and beauty and confidence, and the world more broadly, if we just kind of like open our eyes and let us see things, right? Like I think something I really love to do in my fat studies class is show them this documentary about a gainer, who is, if your listeners are not privy to this fetish, this kink. A gainer is somebody who really likes to gain weight over time, and they are usually accompanied by somebody called a feeder or an encourager, who's somebody who likes to feed people, and they get like erotic pleasure out of that. So the pleasure is coming from both sides, and both watching somebody get bigger and then getting bigger yourself, right? And I think it's I like to show it to them just because this guy like talks really clearly about like this actually is like what makes me feel sexy. Like I feel really sexy living in West Hollywood and not looking like every other muscle clone. Like that makes me feel good. And I think a lot of people don't allow themselves to pause and ask themselves the question, like, what makes me feel sexy? What do I like? Right? Like they only think that these standards that are coming from Hollywood are the only option, the only available things, and also the only things that people are attracted to. And I'm just like, that's absolutely not the case. If you were to see the guys at these chaser bear events, if you were to see the guys that have been in my bed, like you would be very surprised about like the range of people that people are attracted to. And so I just think that we don't have to give into that bullshit. We can just like be ourselves and go from there. And that actually does a lot, which is kind of like my point.
Any last things you want to say about anything we've talked about so far?
I don't think so. I feel like I've yapped a lot. I've been yapper. So thank
No.
you for having me and like, yeah, chatting with me.
Of
It's
course, this is
been fun.
I want to say like I really like how you define anything that you might think somebody doesn't understand. I think that doesn't come naturally to a lot of people. I try to do my best, but I still flop. But you just like, it was so smooth. So I just want to thank you for just being so engaging and also like being aware that some terms might be new to folks. Before we go though, I want to ask you the question I ask everybody, and that is, what's made you less bitter as of late?
That's a great question. And I'm wearing my X-Men 97 shirt, and in honor of the new season that just the first three episodes of the second season just dropped. And it just really gave me everything I was looking for. It was literally, a reason to stay alive. What I think you said about the Carly Rae Jepsen single release too. And I was just like, yes, this is also, another reason to stay alive. So definitely those two things, the X-Men 97 drop and the Carly Rae Jepsen single slash album release that's coming.
Yeah, I've heard a lot of good things about that show. I remember watching the cartoon as a kid. It was very formative. I mean, I got into comics because of it. I got a Jean Grey
Yeah.
tattoo because of the Phoenix Saga. I just like that was so eye-opening for me. I know that it's supposed to be super good. I just never made time for it. And I actually
Yeah.
don't know where it picks up because the last things I remember was Phoenix dying. And then I don't know.
Yeah, it's funny because I remember also remember really loving the 90s cartoon, and I don't think I ever finished it. Even when this new season was coming out, I was like, I should finish it, and I tried to and I couldn't. But it's really really good and really satisfying, and yeah, I've just been really enjoying it. I recommend it.
I'm gonna pick it up at some point. The thing that's made me less bitter has been Carly Rae Jepsen giving us 24 new songs soon. And On Wires, her lead single. At first, I didn't super get it. Like my first listen, I was like, all right, I'm gonna trust that she's gonna take me there. She has 23 other songs. This is gonna fit in the greater journey. But upon re-listen, I'm like, oh my God, like this really hits me. This is giving me something new that I didn't know I needed. And I think that's the magic of Carly Rae is that she doesn't care what like the popular audience is gonna think about her output. She's gonna make the thing that you th that she thinks you need.
I mean, I love her so much, and like I get so frustrated with this comp. Like, there's this like idea that she like flopped or something, and I'm like, no, she like actually is just somebody who stays true to her artistic vision and follow and is like interested in making good music that she's interested in, and it doesn't always make sense to me like immediately. Like, I had a similar, I had a, I've been thinking a lot about for her last album, her lead single was
Shy Boy.
Western Wind,
Oh, the
which was this
okay.
like very like slow like pan flute sort of like it was just completely different than like what we were expecting, anything we had heard from her before. And I was like, what the fuck is happening? And then like in the context of the album, I'm like, it makes so much sense. And it's such an interesting lead single. So like, yeah, I'm like, again, it didn't make immediate sense to me, but I just always trust that I'm in good hands with her and that it will reveal itself. So
Oh, yeah.
got it.
I could talk about that for ages. Like, honestly, I was gonna propose at some point before we took I don't know how much time you had to just have like an extra episode about like let's talk about Carly and what she's meant to
Oh, I
us.
love that.
Yeah. But yeah, where can people find you?
You can find me on, I've been trying to be more consistent with Substack. So I'm on Substack at Chairbreaker and Instagram at Chair X Breaker because I lost my original Chairbreaker handle. But that's sort of my brand. So and those are the two places I'm most active.
Sweet. All right. Yeah, thank you for joining us, Caleb. And thank you everybody for tuning in and go follow them everywhere. Thank you for joining us. Bye. Before we head out though, I want to give a shout out to our I know her level patrons. That's Fernando Peña, Selena Portera, Merinda, Miranda Elias, Magdalena Salcedo, Ronnie Leyva, and Bianca Garcia. If you also want to get a shout out at the end of the episode, go join our Patreon. See y'all.